All right, welcome everyone back to the Forrest Stevens Show. I'm going to be doing this podcast without any notes, without my book. I'm going to just be talking about some new ideas that I have while I'm on a walk. Right now, I'm walking through a trail that's actually intersecting some really old big power lines. It's quite interesting, but I'm just like in some state park in Connecticut. And I don't know if I said this in the last podcast, but it's something that I've thought about, which is just that if you live in a province in Canada, go to the provincial parks in wherever you are and wherever you travel to throughout Canada, if you're traveling at any point. And if you're in America, go to the state parks. The federal parks are great, and the national parks are great, you know, Banff National Park. And, you know, the federal parks basically are like those big ones, you know, Yosemite and places like that. I'm sure they're great, but it's very, very popular. These state parks, if you go in the weekday during the week, this is still August. You know, this is the end of August right now, and everyone has been acting basically like it's already September. So during the week here, there's nobody. There's literally like three other tent campers in a campground that we're staying at here in the state park. And they're like far away from us. We have the whole park to ourselves, all the trails basically to ourselves. Like there's two other hiking groups out, like, and by groups, I mean like a family and then a solo hiker with their dog and then me. And we have miles and miles of trails to explore. It's very fun. I highly recommend it. And I think, it goes for other countries as well. You know, they have their parks for their areas, and I highly recommend going to them because it's a new experience. It's like going to the movies. You go there for an experience. It's like going out to a show, an experience. It's a new experience. And we can do that in this physical world. We can have new experiences, or we can kind of continue doing the same thing. Like, you know, how many episodes of your favorite show can you watch before it starts to get a little repetitive? Just the physical action of laying there and the way the story gets told, the characters, like it all becomes very, very similar. But when you walk out into nature, you see things that are not similar. They're very different. And that is a fun thing to do, I think. And I'm just looking at the trail right now. I'm trying to figure out where to go. I think I'm going to take this red trail back. And yep, I got it. All right. Yeah, so I'm in the middle of the woods in somewhere in Connecticut at this park, and it is really beautiful. Just went up to a really nice vantage point. Took a Instagram story as if I was recording it right there in the windiest spot possible, in the worst spot, the spot that is the most popular. So if there are other people hiking, they would interrupt me podcasting. Had it all set up, did an Instagram story as if I did that, and of course, did not do that. And that's a lesson to anybody here from Instagram and who is checking out my podcast, is that sometimes you just create shit that looks good. And you do that and you put it on Instagram because that's what that platform's for. Now, there is some weird stuff in this stream that I'm seeing. It's like little hairs, little white hairs. And the water is cold. I've seen stuff like this on creeks that are, you know, have sulfur in them because of geothermal activity, but I'm not sure what that is. There's some weird kind of algae growing in this creek. Very uninteresting for you listening, I'm sure, to hear me talk about some white strands of something in a creek that I'm seeing as I record this. So I'm on this hike, I'm walking, and I apologize if this podcast is a little breathy, if there's a little bit of as I start to go uphill, but I'll try to keep that to a minimum going forward. I've been thinking about kind of, you know, I've been traveling through America, and I've been thinking about America a lot, and I've been thinking about its influence on the world and how it is still the new world. It's still the Western, the Wild West, and Canada, to a lesser extent, is the less Wild West. But there is a lot of progress and a lot of just change that happens in America compared to the rest of the world. And that's because of looser policies from the government in a lot of ways. And it's because of the incentive for the entrepreneurial dream that keeps America alive and functioning as it does. There's this real sense of, if I build something great, I get to see the profits from it. I get to reap the benefits. If you live in a country, there's a couple examples out there. You know, Russia might be a bit of an example of this. China might be a bit of an example of this, where if you build something, you basically know that you have to work with the current regime. You have to do this in America as well, but there's kind of at least two players you can play it off of, and a lot of things you can get away with in America that you can't get away with in these other countries where the government has more control. Now, I'm not saying one is better than the other or that anything about that, really. I'm just saying what that does is it makes people not have the incentive of creating something new. It doesn't give them the entrepreneurial spirit because they might think that it's just going to get taken away from them, or they're not going to benefit as much. So there's less incentive, right? If there's less to benefit from, there's less incentive. And that really creates, different cultures and different abilities. Now, those values are changing. There's certain hubs of the entrepreneurial Western dream in every country. They kind of have their crown jewel of the new world, their face of the new age that they're involved in. You know, Dubai, Shenzhen. But in a lot of ways, it is simply just an incentive thing and a kind of an industrious thing. There's this real sense in America where the competition is stiff, but the opportunity is still there. There's so many people. So you actually have to be quite good at what you do to a respect to be successful. And, you know, the people who are very successful are very good at what they do. Let's not pretend that Elon Musk is not a very good businessman and very good at getting attention on him and what he does. And that is basically how he's been able to build businesses. Everything runs on attention, and somehow America, it has the most eyeballs to it, even still. And I think that's basically what the US dollar is pegged to, is the US's ability to be a powerhouse globally in the new age that we're moving into. What do I mean by this new age we're moving into? I think there's a few very simple inventions and discoveries that have really propelled us into the beginning of something, of a way of life that is drastically different. You know, I think we have, you know, there's this quote I heard in this other podcast that I listened to that said, and I'll post the podcast in the description. I can't really cite my sources from memory, but basically what he said is that we have more in common with our past than we do with our future. And he says infinitely so, or like unimaginably so. And I think that's true. You know, we look back on history and we think, okay, well, you know, 100 years ago they had an internal combustion engine. We still have an internal combustion engine today. There was family units. We still have kind of the family unit going on. There's some changes. There's some things going on, but I can relate to that person. Oh, I think I might have just walked my way to a dead end here. Possibly. Let's see. Oh, no. So what are the inventions, and maybe what are some of my thoughts about the way the future is going to be? Because that's the thing. We can look at the past and we can actually see what it is. in the future, we cannot see what the world is. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. That's why so many people are terrified of nuclear war, of pandemics, of anything, anything frightening that will destroy their future or the future that is currently, you know, it destroys their world into some respect. I think this is going to sound corny because it's not popular right now to think this and to be into this, but I think that Bitcoin, not cryptocurrency, but Bitcoin is a revolutionary concept and idea and practice. It's money that is the opposite, basically, of money right now. Our money right now is controlled, and they know that they're going to inflate it at a rate that they want to inflate it by, you know, their target rate is 2%. So every year you get 2% poorer. You know what those kind of negatives do to somebody who doesn't have a lot of money? It's just devastating year after year. It is devastating. It is taking away people's money every single year. So it solves that, and it actually works the opposite way. So it's there's no direct control of it. It's decentralized, and it's decentralized in a way that incentivizes people to be a part of it. And it decentralizes itself in a way that is still fair. There's reason beyond some altruistic reason to be a part of the Bitcoin network and to facilitate the transactions of Bitcoin and the ledger of Bitcoin. Now, the other thing about it is that it's actually deflationary, which is, again, the opposite of our current money. And what that does is every year that you hold it, it is actually more of the pie. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's worth more. There's going to be price swings in it. But every single year, there's actually more of the pie because it is a fixed supply. So we already know what the supply is. There is supply being added, but that's already taken into price action and into basically consideration. But what do I mean by every year there's less of it? Well, there's people who die without giving it onwards, so that Bitcoin is just lost in some account and or some ledger or some hardware wallet, sorry. And there's people who forget their passwords. There's people who just check out of the entire thing and will never go back to it. And by the time they do, they forget the password or whatever, you know. So, and there's just basically that is actually taking Bitcoin out of the supply. It's acting like share buybacks do to a share price, and it makes them the amount of them less, which makes them individually worth more. So those two key things, plus there's some security aspect to just the fact of owning something, where there's real proof of ownership in Bitcoin, where there isn't with cash. Not really. I mean, you have to have this trail that is could be forged, could be a, you know, change. It's just numbers on a screen, basically. And there are players out there with the ability to just add more numbers. And yeah, of course they are adding leverage and debt, but they are still able to just inflate it themselves. So there's inflation that happens all over the place with money that doesn't happen with Bitcoin. The other, I think that the smartphone is a big one, I think, because it has basically completely infiltrated our entire lives and has made us completely live in a different world than we used to. And I think that it is only the beginning. I think that I do believe in some sort of augmented reality, which is just another word for a more digital reality than we currently live in, and potentially even a very digital reality that is like basically the Matrix. I don't mean us being in tubes to do that and being somehow energy, even though there would still need to be energy in to feed the people in the pods. That's what I never understood about the Matrix, is like, how are these people batteries for these machines? That makes no sense. You still have to have energy input in to create the humans and keep them alive in these pods, and then you're taking energy out. Like, that doesn't make sense. Anyway, I think it's going to be more of on our free will. We'll accept that reality and we'll choose that reality. And that's because it benefits us in some ways. And it's basically the new frontier. The digital world, you know, the internet has become the new frontier. And that, you know, is another one of the big inventions. I think they all kind of can, you know, curtail into each other. The internet is the beginning of the new age. Bitcoin is the beginning of the new age. Cell phones is the beginning of the new age. VR, AR, and AI to some degree too. I mean, how much of an impact we have, I think, or it has currently. I mean, I think it currently doesn't have that much effect in our lives. It definitely does, but it's more actually algorithms have more of effect on our lives currently. And I think that AI will have an effect on the algorithms that have an effect on our lives. Will that continue? Will that be part of the new age? I sure hope kind of so and kind of not. You know, if algorithms are just designed to sell us shit and to extract money out of our pockets, just the same way that inflation does, then no, I don't love that. But if algorithms are designed in a way to make us be able to do what we want to do more and, you know, create that efficiency, then that's great. However, it's often times we have this kind of exponential growth of technology that is outpacing kind of our human needs, and yet our human needs are still not being fulfilled globally and in for a large percentage of people. So there's still this this problem with the new age that I think Bitcoin solves, which is you know, actual sovereignty of your own money, you know, actual sovereignty. And it's something that is extremely, extremely important when you start to think about it. Because if you have something stolen away from you, that is your life force being stolen. That is your energy being stolen. That is the energy of all the different people that went into creating that. And that energy is now being used somewhere else, that stored energy, and for somebody else's gain. So I think it's very important for us not to get our shit stolen. I think stealing is there's a reason that it's a criminal act to steal from somebody directly. And I think that there's this less direct way that companies, corporations, individuals steal from us and we allow it. Because I guess we get something from them in exchange, but is it actually worth it in the end? I think probably not. I think it's like, you know, there's a reason that, you know, Facebook makes the amount of money that it does every single month. And it's because it's making it from its users. It doesn't just appear because people use it. They're taking money from their users, not directly, not through a subscription service, but because other people are paying them to have access to the users and the users' information to sell them things. And that works. They buy things. People buy things. And that is the cost you pay. So how much are you paying per month for your Facebook account? Are you paying $20 a month? Are you paying $10 a month? Are you paying $200, $100, you know, $1,000? How high is your Facebook bill? It's not something that we can directly measure a lot of times, but I think, and then, you know, we start calculating in the time that it takes to do things on there. And, you know, this doesn't just go for Facebook. This goes for any other company that is profiting from you indirectly. What else are they taking from you besides just your money? They're taking your time, which is arguably more important than money and more valuable than money. So what's your Facebook bill?